Welcome to New Realities. I'm Alan Steinfeld. This program is produced by Portal to Ascension, portaltoascension.org, and the upcoming conference that's happening October 4th, 5th, and 6th in Irvine, California is an Ascension conference with people like Grant Cameron, Robert Schock, Jason Quitt, major speakers in the UFO Ascension movement. Go to ascensionconference.com. And upcoming is my interview with Stephen Hinke. He's a energy healer, and I think you'll really enjoy this program, full of knowledge, information, and spiritual awakening, right after this music from Alex McPhee. Welcome to New Realities. I'm Alan Steinfeld, and this program is about the evolution of consciousness. And I go around the country, I look for people who are bringing a level of awakening to the planet and investigating their techniques, their styles, their overview of this consciousness that's coming here. And I found a really great one tonight, folks. Dr. Steve Hinke, he's a healer. He does something called healing theater, the theater of healing, or the healing...
Healing theater.
Healing theater. And I think you have such a great overview of the aspects of emerging consciousness from the Eastern and Western, and you put that into someone along with your chiropractic understanding, your energy medicine, and... It seems like when I see you work, your intention is to make that person whole in whatever way you can. So tell me, though, when you're working with someone, okay, you have your hands on somebody, you're sitting there with them, what is it that you are seeing or looking, or is it changed with each person?
That's a great question. And I work on Skype, FaceTime, people text me and say, work on me, and I work on them telepathically. Mm-hmm. In person, though, there's nothing more important than a touch when it's needed, and there's nothing more insulting than a touch when it isn't needed.
Right.
And one of the greatest things I've learned in my course of action is to do the least amount needed. And sometimes you're just about to grab somebody, and you're thinking, okay, I'm going to hold that for a couple of minutes, and a half a second is enough, and you're out.
Right.
And to have the courtesy and the clarity to know when to... get in and get out is a huge thing that came to my mind on the start.
No, you're holding people, but what is going on? What's coming up? What are you perceiving?
So I was gifted with a type of inner vision that I've developed since I was a small child. Stained glass windows used to spin open. I'd find myself walking in whatever scene was depicted kind of thing. And the Latin being spoken in church opened up the energy, and I saw all this prana and essence, and nobody really knew what to do with me. So I was about 19 years old, and somebody looked at me and said, so you think there's something more, huh? Mm. And I said, when am I going to your house? So the next night, for the next 72 hours, Dan McTague, who's still my business partner to this day, 41 years later, took me to his house and did 72 hours of immersion in what all this is.
What
all the inner world is, what all the energy body stuff is, what inner seeing, clairaudience.
And that was new for you, because that opened...
I was living it. I just didn't have have any name for anything.
Right.
You know, I tried to read Gurdjieff, Ouspensky, Bennett. I got Zen Mind, Beginner's Mind, and the first chapter on right posture I use to this day.
Mm-hmm.
I thought it was just brilliant, the constancy stuff that Srinu Suzuki did. I checked that out. However, it was really the Theosophists, the Alice Bailey, Madame Blavatsky, Mabel Collins, Manly Hall groups that really saw me and said, what do you get? And when I showed them what I got, they said, oh, you're the natural.
Right.
So I was invited to join this meditation group that worked twice a week, three hours a time, 45 people in a house in Los Angeles.
Mm-hmm.
And we did it. They've been doing it since the 20s. And I joined them in the late 70s. And when they found out that I was going to stick around, they said, come on in the back room, we want to show you something. So they drew my energy body. They drew my inner cage, my outer cage, my etheric body, the warps and the woofs, noise, hiss, and flutter kind of in drawing. Mm-hmm. And they said, now you're going to do some special mantra, some special meditation. You're going to work on this. It's going to clear this so you're a better telepath. Mm. And I did. And they kept redrawing me and updating me, redrawing me and updating me. So one day they said, you know, you really take to this. Why don't you be Ben's assistant, who was a top electroenergetic homeopath using bowls in the 70s.
This sounds like great work.
Yeah, it was Ben Collimore. He's one of the top homeopath nutritionists. And his wife, Sarah Collimore, who was 30 years his senior, his wife, had been leading these full movement meditations since the 20s, and her husband was a chiropractor, and they, with Bernard Jensen and other people, developed iridology and colon therapy and all the rudimentary beginnings of veganism and all that stuff. So I'm now his scribe, and in comes 100 patients over the next 2 months that are the healthiest 60 to 100-year-old people I have ever seen in my life.
This was before you were even a chiropractor.
Yeah, this is like in 1978.
Mm-hmm.
And 100 people come in, and nobody's younger than 60, and between 60 and 100, and they're just like absolutely like, it was like looking at like the Blessed Virgin in every character, you know, and they're all coming in looking like a different character out of whatever, but they were just all radically alive. And I'm like, I turned to Ben one day and I said, what the hell? And he goes, I know, right? He says, you just have to know what to do. And his wife was at that moment working on somebody, and she had a hold of their arm, and she was belching as she was working on their arm and clearing the interference knots, and the person then could move their shoulder and arm in a way they couldn't when they walked in.
Wow.
And I jumped up and started doing it too, and I started belching, and then they said, oh no, the kid,
belching is the releasing of the energy.
Yeah, and they said, the kid's a natural. So they said, well, start being a healer in the office. So I was a healer in the office.
Mm-hmm.
And then I decided to go to chiropractic college because something told me to do it, you know, and I was a whiz at neurology. I could see the whole inner workings. I dissected. I was just dissect. Where's Steve? He's in the dissection lab. I mean, I just dissected cadavers with knives.
Oh, you were actually...
I mean, I took the whole body apart. I took the brain apart.
And you
took
needed
the spinal
to do
cord
that
apart
to...
Because I wanted to get down to the tiniest nuclei and atoms that were responding to the essence of the soul pouring into the etheric body that you quote-unquote can't see, but yes, we can see it, and how that animates the body, and what does it animate first, and what does it animate second, which comes through the endocrine system, comes through the
what
nervous system.
What does it animate first, the soul?
It appears that the soul, the etheric body is the body of the soul. The soul goes no denser than that, they say, and that the etheric body in its quality, its radiance, has to do with how much surrendered we are to the actual soul running our life.
Mm.
And when that actual soul is running our life, and when it cracks open to new levels of awareness, ongoing, unfolding, evolving, it really dynamically affects the glands, the endocrine system. The endocrine system will be it's the system of the future. 100, 200 years from now, the endocrine system will be the main thing that we look at.
Our ductless glands, the pituitary, pineal.
Pineal, pituitary.
Heart, you know, spleen.
There's glands in the heart, glands in the spleen, glands in the kidney. There's glands in places we don't even know probably that are going to wake up and that are going to show us where they are once we can work with them better.
So by feeding the endocrine system, we feed the whole body.
And by feeding the soul and the person, when the soul and the personality feed each other, that creates the greatest amount of shift in food for the body.
And so, the endocrine glands are also related to the chakras, if you want.
Sure.
Yeah,
and the plexi. And,
right. So anyway, so by feeding that, you're saying we're feeding the whole body.
We are. And so when you have soul food, when you have real, true soul energetic pouring through the mind, brain, astral body, physical body of a human being, when that being is thriving on soul nature, that being is thriving at their highest level. Mm. And so when they said to me, as I got my chiropractic license, they said, you know, keep working for us. And so I said, yeah, well, when the day comes. And so on a Friday, I got my mail, and it says, Dear Doctor, I called up Ben. I said, I'm a doctor.
He's That's like 4 years of school, though.
Yeah, four or five, close to, and stuff. And so he said, well, come on, be on our radio show. We have the oldest talk
said,
radio
this
show.
To who? Who
Ben,
it?
Ben Collimore,
to
the homeopath. He said,
okay.
Sarah and I have the top holistic radio show in Southern California. It's tomorrow. Come on and be on the show.
Mm-hmm.
So I went on the show in Glendale, KIEV, 22 minutes of talk, 8 minutes of commercials, and see you later.
Mm-hmm.
And I expressed, you know, my ambition to help the heal the world, you know. And my whole practice was built up one premise, which is a law of healing that says all disease is inhibited soul life. The job of the healer is to lift the downcast eyes upwards onto the soul, and the soul does the work. And I just said, that's the work. That's it. The soul does the work, or I don't.
All disease
is inhibited soul life, and the job of the healer is to lift the downcast eyes upward on the soul, and the soul does the work. And when the soul starts flowing through, it reorganizes you.
Uh-huh.
Because it's our resistance to the soul that keeps us deflecting into glamour, illusion, and maya.
Right.
And it keeps us deflecting into karma's beliefs and wishing things could be otherwise. And it keeps us clinging to the past or a fictitious future, trying to avoid not having the same experience twice, trying to have the same experience twice, that generates the suffering that even the Buddha said, it's neither this nor that. Mm. All disease, you know, suffering is real. Suffering is optional. I create all my suffering. I end all my suffering, and all suffering is caused by clinging to the past, the future,
that's
to judgment,
Buddhist,
to wishing,
yes,
things could,
yes,
be otherwise.
Yes. Yeah.
Well, if you want to be free more than anything else, no matter what, you have to want to be free more than anything else, no matter what. And that
is, no matter what,
no
is,
matter
the key
what
words.
Is the key words. And you, that means you live in the now.
Yeah.
Well, the now is fed from spirit to soul to personality and expresses itself nowly. And if that's not happening, then you got diseasely.
Right.
And so we can help with that.
The difference between spirit and soul is what, in your opinion?
Well, the monad, or the super spirit, is a highly powerful thing. So the personality, say, is a match head.
Mm-hmm.
The soul is like the sun.
Mm-hmm.
And the spirit is like 10 suns.
Okay.
It's a step-down transformer, so that eventually the personality can actually become the spirit, but the soul is the intermediary that doesn't let us get over-fried while we grow.
And the soul, from what I've read, also records the experiences of lifetime and holds it as
so you recapitulate them until you can integrate them fully, and then no longer need do that, and the soul disappears when the spirit and the personality can blend and merge, which is down the road for us.
Right, and then you're free. Then you become the awakened.
Oh, yeah, well, you are what you are. Yeah. And the sun is your food at that point,
which feeds
everything. So right now you got egos revolving around themselves that can do a hell of a lot of stuff with that. However, it's a dead-end street eventually. You can only be Elvis Presley so many incarnations in a row before you realize that isn't the top.
What is better than Elvis Presley?
A spiritual version. So you have to have, you know, Jesus Christ Presley or Moses Presley or, you know, Abraham Presley. You have to have the spirit-infused, soul-infused Elvis Presley to arrive at the purpose.
But there was something you said when, before you would work on anyone, there was a certain prayer or intention you set forth from the Alice Bailey work.
Right,
what was
you know
that?
What I did? I said, since that's the thing, every single person I work on, and I probably said it 25,000 times out of 25,000 times. I said, I walked in, I just went, all diseases inhibit soul life. The job of the healer is to lift the downcast eyes upward to the soul, and the soul doesn't work.
And you say that before
every
you work?
Every single person. And I'd bring the soul, I'd invoke my soul or the soul into the room, and I would connect with my aspect of the soul or my soul star and their aspect of the soul, their soul star, and I would talk soul to soul, because I figured if they have problems, they're not listening to the soul. So I'll listen to the soul and then I'll report it to them.
Right. So they're not listening to the soul because of what's in the way, but isn't that part of their soul's journey? To learn that lesson.
Well, yeah,
of
so
not
the personality's
listening.
Looking down,
right.
Saying, I got this figured out, let me handle it, God, I got it. And then they get bashed off into the glamours, illusions, mayas, beliefs, traumas,
karmas. So
how
do you work through the personality? This is something I'm dealing with, also dealing with. A friend is also very much.
So
you
what
can't
I said,
force someone.
No, you cannot. However, what you can do is identify what is happening. Because everybody who has something happening has built a story about what's happening, and 99% or more, maybe a lot more, of the story is not what's happening. It's about what's happening, but it's not what is happening.
Wait, give me an example of that.
So people can, I'll give you a perfect example. We'll go backwards and forwards a little
bit.
So this woman comes to see me in 1986. I said to myself, okay, I've been in practice a year now. What do? I get a new patient. I see them for an hour. The patient talks 45 minutes. I talk 10 minutes. I work on them 5 minutes. Some miraculous thing happens, and they become a new patient, and I see them 3 times a week for a month, and then we see what happens. So far, they're getting over diabetes, infertility, depression, you know, irritable bowel, asthma. Everything we saw was going poof. It was like the wildest practice ever. So then I thought, okay, well, what if I see somebody for 45 minutes, let them talk 30 minutes, I talk 10 minutes, work on them 5 minutes, and maybe I save 15 minutes a day, a person, right. a new patient only. So I said to my mom, you know, who's next? She said, oh, you have Bill here. He's a new patient. So he came in, and I let him talk 30 minutes. I talked 10 minutes, worked on him 5 minutes. Everything was great.
Right.
And I thought, you know what? I'm not going a year like this. Maybe if I let him talk 20 minutes or 15 minutes, I talk 10 minutes or 5 minutes, and then work on him 5 minutes, maybe I can get out of here a half an hour on a new patient. Mm-hmm. And my mom said, here's Betty. It's her first visit. Mm-hmm. Great. So we go in. We sit down. It's a brand-new office, $36,000 in 1986 or seven. I've got on a suit, silk coat, tie, linen pants, lambskin shoes.
1986, is it?
White custom lab coat, my name on my lapel, all this fancy crystals and fabulous music and hair down on my shoulders, and you know. And I'm and this 73-year-old woman comes in and she sits down and she says, oh doctor. And the minute I heard that, I said, I don't want to hear another word out of her mouth. Mm-hmm. I said, 1 second, please. I have to tell you what's wrong. I said, I don't want to hear it. She says, I got to tell you my story. I said, I don't want to hear it. She says, I'm telling you what's wrong. I said, shut the fuck up. And then I went, oh, no. I mean, and she looked at me horrified, and I turned away from her, and I went, I've just handed back my suit and my shoes and my Fendi purse and my white coat and my new $36,000 office and my license.
Right.
And finally, I just kind of said, how many doctors have you been to? 17. How many did you tell your story to? 17. How many got you better? None.
Right.
Do you think I could have 5 minutes of silence? Okay. And I sat there and I said, what the hell do I do now? And I looked at the paper and there was an outline of a human body on it. And I said, I'm going to draw her.
What do you mean, looked at what paper?
I just had a paper in front of me and had the outline of the human body
okay,
on it.
Okay, like your little
sketch outline. And I said, I'm going to draw her.
Okay.
And I hadn't drawn somebody in like a year or two. Uh-huh. I hadn't thought about it.
Right.
And I picked up my pen and I started scribbling her energy body just like they did for me in the meditation. I drew her inner cage and her outer cage.
Right.
And as it did it, it was like opening up a piezoelectric view box of her whole life.
Uh-huh.
I set the pen down and I said, okay, when you were 2.5, your father died. At 4.5,
how did you know this?
I could see it all.
You could see
just
it all.
From
wow.
Sideways. Telepathy works out of your peripheral vision.
Right.
Because the optic nerves are in the way.
You kind of channeled this little drawing and you started to read it.
It's not my word, but I used this drawing and I said to her, you know, when your father died at 2.5, your uncle moved in at 4.5, you didn't like him very well. At 13.5 or 14, you had an abortion. You're 73 now. This is 87. That must have been a hell of a time to have an abortion. At 22, you married a man you didn't love. You hated him your entire life. He died 3 years ago. You miss him terribly every day since. Now your skin itches all the time. You can't sleep. You can't rest. The doctors try to think you're diabetic, but you're not diabetic enough yet. So you're in some gray zone where nobody knows what the hell is going on. Like, go get sicker and come back to see me. I looked at her. And she said, I never told nobody none of that stuff my entire life. I said, how much of it's true? She said, all of it. I said, do you need to tell me your story? No. Do you need to hear more about me for me to be able to help you? No. Get down on the table. I worked on her. She had a huge
breakthrough. What do you do when you work on somebody?
At that point, I was using energetic healing works that were hands-on techniques pretty much exclusively. Then I started doing a room where I put 10 tables in the room and had 40 people around me. And I started noticing I was directing energy where I stood to people sitting around the room or would walk up and touch somebody's shoulder, work on somebody on the table. Then I started realizing some people came and never needed to get on the table. Some people never needed to get touched. So I opened up the whole room. So I had 3 tables and 45 seats, and only somebody who needed to get on the table took a table, and everybody else stayed where they were, and that gave rise to the group healing events that I now call healing theater.
Uh-huh. Sounds like a little like network chiropractic.
Well, you know, he was a student of mine.
Donnie was a student of yours? Donnie
and I learned a lot from them, too. And I taught Mortar Health Systems and Dr. Mortar a lot of things, and he taught me a lot of things back. So Best Chiropractic, Network Chiropractic, you know, Bloodless Surgery, Maynard Jadarnet, great doctors in that side of the fence like Dennis Pick and people like that that are were SOT practitioners, Bloodless Surgery practitioners, really great stuff. However, I had to keep, every time I got into a system, I had to drop the system because I knew that it wasn't the system. I knew it was inhibited soul life.
Right.
So I couldn't let technique be the thing that did it. It had to be the soul that did it. So I became very, very eclectic. And I use a lot of reflex points on the feet and on the knees and in the belly now.
And it's how you're working now.
Yeah.
Even now, you're still...
Now, if I need to touch, I touch. If I need to touch something in a quote-unquote network best way or a SOT way or a bloodless surgery way, I do. I got no problem with that.
You know Richard Bartlett's work? He's a chiropractor, does energy, really.
There's some great stuff right now.
There is.
And Scott Zimmerman up in Mamaroneck, New York is a great doctor. Russ Rosen now out in California, moved from Hawaii. Bruce Moore in San Francisco, or San Anselmo, Larkspur area, phenomenal, phenomenal. Ed Wagner, the chiropractor in Pacific Palisades.
David Milgram, you know Milgram?
No, I don't. Martha Lynn in Chicago. Jaina Gonzaga, Jim Claussen, Helen Lee, who moved to Canada. I mean, just spectacular doctors. And we've all touched base with each other. We've all, and I had a, at one point I was teaching doctors, and I invented healing theater kind of on a new turn of the spiral by working with all these doctors in Chicago area, and then tell them, bring the best of the best, you know, from your practice to a hotel room, and we did eight practitioners and 100-300 people and me rotating between. And
so why do you call it healing theater? You explained it, but to tell people.
Well, the theater, you know, theater is where a lot of change happens. I mean, Shakespeare did theater in the round because, and in theater because that's where you could get the attention of the king and the queen and the hoi polloi, the prime ministers. That's where you could make people think, you know. And then you had the operating theater in London. If you go to London, the old... operating theater is it's a classroom almost like set up where they sawed off legs and used ether and stuff, and it's a standing thing with these skinny little iron rails, and it goes almost straight up, and they could have fit 400 or 500 doctors and the and nurses and students in the operating theater while they did the operations. And then, you know, in war you've got the theaters, and theater was just kind of is like a container for super focused work.
So in your work, people sit around, someone comes up and sits on a hot seat, and you just see what needs to happen there.
And I look at them with the same way I do the drawings, and I find the area that is the thing that's grabbing the most attention, that's going to bring the most focus to the person in that moment, beyond all story, beyond all symptom, beyond all everything. They might have a hurt knee, a bad, an ovary cyst, a depression. They might be going through a great spiritual breakthrough. A lot of my patients, you know, I've had gurus and swamis and yogis and their ashrams as my patients for decades now. And a lot of them are having these great kundalini awakenings, tantra awakenings, and things are convoluted because they're not realizing that the purpose of this is to come to know divine love, to know the soul, to get in touch with the actual Christ, the actual Buddha, the actual Messiah, the actual Aman Mahdi, the actual white buffalo spirit, the actual thing, like the actual center of the ashram is trying to speak to all of us and love through all of us. And so because that's they don't know that's what it's for, the misguided purpose jams them straight over into their own glamours, illusions, and mayas. It throws a central channel energy that's rushing upwards to the side into Ida and Pingala, to masculine and feminine, to right and wrong, good and bad, fear and confidence. It throws them into the polarities. And now they think they got to work in these polarities onto forever, and they forget the whole previous 10,000 lifetimes they've ever lived. And the journey becomes this madness that irritates the hell out of them. So I come in and try to... I take them to the place where the bifurcation is, to the place where the energy splits.
Uh-huh. You take them back to that.
To that point. And almost always I start with a person when they're going to go through that kind of a change, right at the tip of the coccyx, right at the original atom of light of the purpose of embodiment of this identity, and build upward. And anytime it's like to the side, back to that point, back to that point, back
just
to that
back
point.
Just back to that point will start to center their whole soul essence.
Never go past that point if you bifurcate sideways, forwards, backwards, upwards, or downwards. You have to hold steady at the original point of energetic alive, I'm here, I am that, with the soul's energy right there at the tip of the coccyx, at the root chakra. And then from there, you can start to build upwards and, you know, through that root chakra, through the channel to the sacral chakra, in the sacral chakra, through the channel to the solar plexus, in the solar plexus, through the channel to the heart,
and
in the heart.
If it starts to go off, you're pulling it back.
If it starts to go off, go back to the very beginning and start over. Don't just try to drop an inch below it because you might not enter at the right place. Your mind tells you tricks that, and as Bob Dylan said, ain't no shortcuts.
But you know this because you've spent 25 years, 30 41. Years, 40 years
and
doing
And I've refined
this.
It over and over and over, and every time, excuse my French, every time I start at the beginning.
And every time, with every person.
With every person. And when I work on them, if I see something, in somebody's right side, and I go, right, it's right there, and I point from 10 feet away, and the person goes, yeah, no one's ever so, that's exactly where. I go, okay, now let it expand, let it open to this, focus on this area, focus on what's happening. Oh, my God. Oh, I'm so hot. I'm so hot. Oh, I'm feeling so much joy. I thought this was all sadness and anxiety. And it's not, then once they get in there, it's something else.
Right.
Often, right? So I start doing this kind of work with people, and I just say, you know, and then I look away. I look away. I rinse my hands. Uh-huh. I look at somebody else. How are you doing? And then I look back, and then that person I was looking at or working with, even on a one-on-one session, I look away or go rinse my hands and come back. Now I look at that person as if I've never seen them before, and I start at the beginning again on that person.
To see how clear they are.
So if I have to work with a person for an hour, and I need to make between 200 contacts, every single time I make a contact in voice, in sound, in tension, or in touch, it's the first time. It's the first time. It's the first time.
Beginner's mind.
It's beginner's mind. And that's why when I draw somebody or I draw the group meditations that I draw, suffice it to say, everything is printed as a one-off. I only do one-of-the-kind things because everything has that source built into it so that the energy, if it's going to go vertical, is strong and true. And if it wobbles, we can start right back at the beginning until we can hold a strong and true vertical dynamic, which is the center arm of the cross, really, so that our horizontal expression is built out of a stable, loving, Christed, Buddhic, Atmic, you know, whatever word you want to give to the most divine light and love possible on the planet, God, Goddess, whatever, Gaia, whatever vertical dynamic that is, so that our lives are a horizontal expression of that. Of that much love,
that soul essence, and that that changes people. I mean, that has to change people.
Life altering. Their life is never the same.
And you work on people actually if they're not present too.
Yeah, yeah. People call me from all over the world. I Skype, I video, WhatsApp, I FaceTime. Like I said, people who are with me a while, they'll text me and say, check me, and I'll work on them telepathically. They pay me by the month or by the year, my longer-term people.
But they have to want it. You can't say, I want you to work on a friend who...
Oh, no, no. The person has to reach out. The reaching out by the friend is the most important part oftentimes for somebody, is the reaching out part.
The reaching out, saying, okay, I'm ready for
some
help.
You can't make an appointment for somebody else. You have to make an appointment for yourself. The other day somebody says, I want you to see my friend so-and-so. And I said, well, have him call me. Oh, I know my friend. She loves me. She wants me to set it up. I said, don't take it away from them.
They have to ask for
help.
They
have to ask for help. That's their asking.
And if they don't, then they don't want
they don't,
it.
They're not ready yet. You know, sometimes just hearing the name is enough to get the homeopathic version of it, right? You've done enough spiritual stuff in your life that you've got this amazing thing. You want everybody to come to your house to see it. And like three people call and say, I'm on my way, and nobody shows up. It's like they got the homeopathic hit off of it kind of thing. And that's enough.
Or they didn't, right?
Or they didn't.
Because,
or they
passed. You know... But we are in an interesting time now, right? Do you feel like there's a vibrational shift? Talk about the group work and all
that. Okay, everybody wants to feel like they're in a vibrational shift. And here's how you can find out if you are.
Tell me.
Ego is orbiting itself. And it's the planet is a dark planet because everybody on it who's an ego orbits itself, and the planet is orbiting and spinning.
Mm-hmm.
You know, like a planet like Mercury, it no longer spins. Mm. It still goes around the sun. However, it's worked out its karmas to the point, and its love essence to the point where the planet apparently doesn't even spin.
Okay.
So the planet is spinning on itself. I just heard that the other day, so don't quote me until I research
Whatever.
It. But the planet is spinning, and these egos are spinning, and a spinning ego, as they become integrated, as the mind, emotions, and body become integrated, you do become Elvis Presley, Marilyn Monroe of your genre,
right.
of your life.
Right, right,
and
right.
it's harder to get a camel, you know, easier to take a camel through the eye of the needle than put a rich man in heaven. And a rich man is a spinning ego that's an integrated personality.
Full of stuff, right?
It's an integrated personality without soul, but it can have a boat, it can have a yacht parked off con, it can have, you know, whatever it wants. It can buy the best art, it can have the best car, it can have whatever life it designs for itself. But it isn't Christed. It's not.
There's no soul
Buddha.
There.
There's nothing there.
Right.
And its majestic opportunity is being missed. So comes along the desire for something more. I'm ready for the something more. I want, please, you know, prove me herewith, bring me the something more. And when the soul breaks through and the soul starts functioning in the form, that's when the trials begin, because it ain't always easy. It's not like you immediately go straight to super health. People get thrown under a bus.
Wait, let me just absorb that. So when you start to say, I want to change, the trials will test that ego, say, are you sure we're going to have to let go?
That too, maybe. But without even that, without even the cycle version of that, when you commit to pure love, when you commit to divine love, when you commit to the Buddha nature, that commitment can hurl you straight into an onrushing train, and you just have to deal with it. And you have to deal
and
with
it. It does that because it wants.
I don't know about because. It just sometimes happens that way.
Right.
And when that happens, your job is to love whatever the divine expression is in any given moment.
Mm-hmm.
So I was electrocuted.
You were.
In the mouth.
You were.
By a dermatologist with a cauterizer in the late 90s, and I was given no chance to live.
Oh, really?
By three of the top doctors in the world.
Mm.
And I spent 7 years in my room and rebuilt myself cell by cell.
Wow.
And then I went traveling the world, and when I went traveling the world, one of the top Qigong body workers in the world in Hong Kong, Mrs. Lam, also an amazing healer, worked on me for 2.5 hours. At one point, she grabbed a place in the back of my knee and with her hands and tore the artery a couple inches inside, then worked down in there real hard for about 20 minutes. I didn't even flinch. After it was over, she said to my friend, no one on earth like him, 1 in 9 billion. If somebody has 1% of this energy, they have stroke, heart attack, die. If somebody has 10% of this energy, they pull their eyeballs out with their fingers and fall over dead. She said, this is the most radical amount of energy I've ever seen anybody take on, and he did it by eating it. And I said, tell her she's right.
You ate her energy.
I ate the electrocution, because every split second of the day, if anything touched it, the same bolt of lightning went up into my brain as happened when I was electrocuted with the cauterizer for 7 years, until my friend cut it out and threw the nerves away that had been damaged. So
wow.
I was having this 10, 15, 20,000 jolts a day hitting me in the brain with this headache that was bad enough for an elephant to crush my head, and I refused to take any drugs because it 20 Oxycontin when you cut it.
Right.
And so I just didn't do it.
Right.
So I had this brutal headache, and I kept eating the energy, running it down to my root or sacral chakra, and it came right back up, and I kept eating it back down in it. I just did this ruthlessly over and over and over for 7 straight years while my mind is screaming, you know, just shoot yourself in the head, just shoot yourself in the head,
wow.
just get out, just get out. This radical event happened
wow.
to me. But, you know,
you did it.
I did it. And now here I am, and I'm having
a
beautiful day with
you. How
long ago was that? 1999 to 2006, 7.
So you're just coming out of it.
And then a friend of mine called me and said, look, man, you just proved again you're the guy for the job. Get out here and teach us how to do it. So I started teaching doctors and traveling the world and created healing theater.
But what did that do for you as a healer? You're already a great healer. What did that do to shift you to some other level of your...
Well, you know, it took me from one of the most positive people you've ever met in your life, like a blazing sun. I had billions and billions of amps or something of energy, watts of energy going through me. And whenever people would meet me, they're like, ah. And it flipped it, and I became one of the most negative, angry people, and I had to, like, the only way I could survive it was to burn all that energy out of me. So I'd stay awake for 36 hours and rest for 36 and 2 for years and years and years to burn out it, because if I had too much energy in my body, I just felt so upset, you know? And it made me very, very negative, and it brought out all my opposite qualities and emptied the tank. And, you know, I paid a lot for it. And then about 2-3 years ago, I just said, okay, I can stop depressing the energy. I can stop throwing it out now. So I just kind of slowly let it creep back in and then spend it and creep back in and then spend it. And today, you know, as we're seeing today, I got about 10 or 20% of the energy I originally started with. And my sense is it will go to even more than I had because slowly, slowly catchy monkey. Life is helping me to integrate it. The soul is helping me to integrate the hit.
Yeah. But what was the soul growth that you went through because of that experience?
So when you say that, twice in a row now, my mind said micro refinements, micro detail refinements, to be able to go into the tiniest minutiae with an angel or with a human or with an animal or with a mineral or with a vegetable and get right down into the minutiae and breathe with it right where life unfolds. Because to go deeper and deeper and deeper into the subtlest of the subtlest of the subtlest where life unfolds, then you really are right at where God takes form.
And you couldn't have done that without that experience, maybe.
Maybe I could have, but maybe I don't know. I'm making it up, really. I don't know why, other than I lived through it.
You lived through it, and you're, in a way, can help people in a much more extreme way than you ever could have.
I suppose. My teachers used to send me their wrecked cases while I was laying in bed. They'd call me up and say, I'm sending you John. John just had a stroke, and half his brain is gone. And John would come in and... John was a rocket scientist and was totally left brain his whole life. His stuff is flying around us in the heavens right now. Mm-hmm. Worked for Hughes Aircraft. His wife drags him in. She had to pull the walker to keep him upright. If she let go of the walker, he'd fall over sideways. He had a stroke about a month before. And he sits down on the couch, and I'm looking at him. And I had a photographic memory, and then when that happened, I was erased. One day, everything just erased. I was laying in my bed and everything erased, and I didn't even know hardly how to move my hand. And then my mom walked in my room and spoke to me, and I spoke to her, and my voice was about 6 feet off my body, and I realized my brain and mind were kind of constructed out in my field, and they weren't like in my head at that point, and it was very bizarre. So I couldn't put my thoughts together, and I thought, okay, the Asian mind, I think, thinks in a circle. It grabs bits and pieces, so it doesn't speak in such a linear way as the West, if I have that right. Or maybe it's a rainforest group. I don't know. I was just playing with it. And in comes John, like 4 weeks later. And he sits there, and I said, how can I help you, sir? And he said, I can't think straight. And I said, great. He looked kind of shocked. And you'll find out that whenever everybody tells me their stuff, I always say, great, because that helps to pinpoint where the actual thing is, because they're hung up on what they think it is. Mm-hmm. Just using a simple command like that can help them go back to what it actually is, and it helps highlight the chink in the armor and the glint to target specific what it actually is.
When you say great, they go to a deeper place,
right,
you're saying?
Right, because they've got this whole story they're going to jack you with, or that they've been telling themselves, or that they've been to all these practitioners who can't help them, or they got all these drugs that didn't work, and then they go, well, you know, I'm so depressed, and I've been on lithium for 7 years from my psychiatrist, and I go, that's wonderful, and they go, what? And the minute they go, what? That vulnerability shows me the weakness, the chink, the interference pattern, the bifurcation, the split, and it helps me target in on some people. Little secret.
Psychically.
Little secret.
That's
it helps
fine.
Me
Thank
see
you.
It. Little secret. Helps
I got
me,
it.
Helps me see it.
All right.
So I said, great. And he kind of looked, and I said, can you think in a circle? Rocks back and looks around the room. Yeah. I said, isn't that amazing? God gave you such an incredible left brain that the world, that the sky is operating from it. And before you die, he's giving you the opportunity to find out what life is like thinking with the other side. Wow! And then I did a bunch of work with him for like 20 minutes, and the next day he walked in on a cane unassisted. It straightened his whole nervous system.
Wow, so those are the kind of...
radical shifts.
But it's also something you really enjoy.
Oh, I love it.
Yeah. Yeah.
Oh,
you really like understanding the secret of life, in a sense.
I've had different presences that talked to me when I was a little kid, like the angel of the flaming sword, and different presences that I felt an affinity to. And when I joined the group meditation group back in the late 70s, and here's all these people who, you know, are getting these drawings and clearing themselves out, and they're now meditating, on about 81 or 2 or 3, Ben decided he was going to start drawing what happened during the group meditation after the fact. So we recorded everything, we typed everything out, I still have some of the transcripts. And you'd come on a Tuesday and a Friday, and when you showed up on Friday, the cover of the transcript would be this drawing, this geometric drawing of what the group had done in formation with the hierarchy, with the Christ, with the Buddhas, with the angels, with the divas, with whomever. There it would be, and you'd look at it, and it acted as instantly as a talisman, and the second you looked at it, you were completely in touch with the meditation from before. Then you'd read a little bit of it, and then that night's meditation would start, and it kept the dynamic going. Mm-hmm. So about 12 years ago, I was at Dr. Lin's office in Chicago, Hoffman Estates, and I decided to do a healing theater weekend, Friday, Saturday, Sunday. 23 people came. I'd just gotten my new iPad, and I'm sitting there with my iPad. And on Friday night, I said, okay, we've gone from pen and paper scribble drawings that have transformed healing because my patients happen to get over stuff that other people didn't. I'm thinking it had to do with this inner seeing stuff. Not only the drawing, but the touch and the word and the timing. So then I shifted to flip charts with colored markers as I went around the world 20 times and did 700, 800, 900 healing theater events. And then that was really powerful. People started like shaking in their seat when I draw with colored markers. I'm like, whoa. I started drawing with the colored markers, and this one woman shook apart so much she was underneath her chair by the time I finished the drawing. And then I started thinking, you know what? These drawings might actually be doing some of the healing work, not just diagnosing it.
Yeah.
And then the iPad came out about 6 months later, and so I grabbed the iPad, and I remember I was drawing some people, very fond people to me, some people I helped. I got to officiate their wedding, and two of the 23 people and their friends. So I'm drawing on the iPad Friday night, and I said, okay, we're going to get everybody drawn this weekend and then see what happens. So I drew like 8 drawings Friday night, plus my talk on whatever I like to talk about. Saturday morning, I did some more drawings and some more talk, and about 2:30 in the afternoon, I've got everybody's drawings done on digital, and now they're showing on the TV, and they're like every 8 second dissolve kind of thing. And when you do a drawing for one person, everybody in the room can feel where in them it's like their stuff,
right?
Not exactly their stuff, but so much like their stuff that when you draw 23 people, it's like having 200 adjustments, 200 healing sessions.
Mm-hmm.
And so they're all in there buzzing away, and Don says, so what do we do now? And I said, well, now we meditate. Oh, like what? I said, we're going to do group telepathic meditation. It's different than what you're familiar with. We're going to go into our bodies. We're going to center ourselves. Then we're going to rise up out of the mind into what's called the Buddhic plane, the plane beyond mind and the planes beyond that. And then we're going to introduce ourselves to whoever lives up there and bring them down through our vehicles and express the living nature of the spiritual kingdom just beyond the human kingdom that's attempting to take form next. And we'll just demonstrate that forward and see what we get. That was like the best explanation, a short little explanation. They're like, oh, okay, well, who lives there? I said, angels, divas, the Christ, Buddhas, gods, goddesses, anybody who's evolved out of this morass or can't descend any lower than that plane at this time lives in the next kingdom up. They're like, oh, okay. So we go into meditation. There's some special mantras and mantras used that invoke it. The whole place is just buzzing. And I look back and like, the whole room goes blue and pink and yellow, and then there's a Buddha over there, and there's an angel. I said, man, the place is packing. So I reached down and grabbed my iPad, and I drew the meditation as I was guiding it. It wasn't a silent meditation. I guided it for about an hour. And afterwards, I stopped, and then we all sat there, and we dialed the lights back up, and I looked around, and they looked exhausted. They looked blasted. They looked stoned. I said, well, what's happening? And they went, oh, my God, there was all these presences and essence and energy. And I turned the iPad around, and three people went, I saw that. Mm-hmm. And one guy says, I saw the pink Buddha. Somebody says, I saw a blue field. Somebody says, I saw this whoosh come through that I thought was an angel. And pretty soon everybody said, oh, I saw some of the stuff in the drawing. And I said, I've captured the group talisman of the meditation. Mm-hmm. Everybody use it for a week and see if it helps sustain and grow the meditation, then I'll do another one in the meditation next week. It did, it worked, everybody reported back huge transformations and how they did it. So I led meditations on Sunday morning, which I still do on the phone, Wednesday night, which I still do on the phone, and two other odd times a month for the last 8-9 years since then, and I did 736 meditations in a row as meditation drummers.
And what changed then?
I took a day off I got separated from my iPad one day.
Yeah.
It shifted the energy, and now I only draw when they elbow me and inspire me to draw.
But did something change in the group through that group dynamics of that meditation?
Oh my God! I mean, the group just grew, and it infused itself with all that nature. It used all that art as talismans. As a matter of fact, I was sitting in a bar in Los Angeles last year, and I told somebody I had these meditation drawings and that they could have video playback so you could actually see each stroke come into being. He said, come and show me. I have one of the top art galleries in LA. I went and showed him. He said, oh my God, this is love. I mean, this big, fabulous guy named Rigo, a guy who had a gallery down in Chinatown, 7,500 square foot gallery. We flip it open and he stands there and hit the button on one of the stroke replays, and it was like 18 seconds in total, and it cracked him right down the middle, and he shook. And he looked at me and he said, this is love. I said, yes, Rigo, this is love. He says, I want this pouring out of my gallery. I'll give you this whole wall and that whole wall, 3,500 square feet. He says, I need this pouring out of my gallery during this transition time, because it was right when Trump was becoming sworn in and stuff, and the world was in early chaos on that. So we put up 65 pieces of art, and 30 of those videos that take 30 seconds to a minute to bloom the art and then do another one and do another one. And it radiated out of his gallery all night, 24 hours, 7, and packed the place. And I went out to Bergamot Station in Santa Monica, which is kind of like mini Chelsea, you know, about 30, 40 galleries. And I asked Philippe Caland, whose mother's Huguette Caland, very famous artist, if I could have his studio. And he said, yes. And we put 3,500 square foot one together there with 75 pieces of art, more video art. 4,000 people came through. Mm-hmm. And it launched my art career.
I see you working on a planetary level.
That's like what we're doing.
Something's happening planetarily for the vibration of the Earth.
Yeah.
How do you think you can assist? What's your job in that?
You know, the next step for humanity is group conscious love.
What does that mean?
It means that as an individual, you cannot succeed your life going forward another day by using will or intelligence to work your way through your problems. You have to use love. Love can incorporate some will. Love can incorporate some intelligence. However, love is going to be the answer. And when love is the answer, it's inclusive. It won't screw your neighbor. It won't hurt some other subgroup. It won't rob from Peter to pay Paul. Love, when love is the detail that works out the problem, it's a group conscious thing. The soul is a group conscious event. From the mental body down, mind, astral, emotional, physical, this is our domain, and it's our domain to make sacred. And when we cut ourselves off from the soul, we have inhibited soul life. When we add ourselves back into the soul and capture the essence beyond mind in the subtle territory above mind, where, and it's been said, all creation is done in duration.
Is what?
All creation is done in duration. The place above the mind is the duration, the eternal, the noumenal, the no mind.
The luminal, yes.
So you have to go, all healing occurs beyond phenomena. In the noumenal, all creation is done in duration. In the Buddhic, in the noumenal, so you have to leave the mind into the subtle terrain to bring something new through, or else all you've done is modify something old.
So there's more soul essence coming to the earth now.
Oh, God, yes. And as that soul essence pours in, it's group conscious. The soul by design is group. So when you realize that the soul is group and the soul is love, and you incorporate that into your life, things start working out, so you won't even allow yourself to be given an extra 3 cents to change back from your coffee.
The soul is group, but the ego is individualized.
Is individualized, and the ego's lesson is to surrender itself to group conscious love.
To the soul.
Soul. And then when it's lined up just right, spirit can flash through, but only for a few moments.
But the problem is some people think they're giving their soul as a sacrifice, and they ignore their ego self, and they do it because they're martyring their ego to this soul, but they're not really.
That's an illusion, mental masturbation.
So when they give some their self up totally as somebody else or something else, it's really not a soul thing.
That's a subservience to an idea, in my personal opinion.
I agree with you. And so that's just another form of ego, but they don't see it because it's reversed inside.
Yes. And it's like when I say women drive, when I do my relationship.
Oh, yeah, I love your relationship stuff.
And I said women drive, and then the woman says, well, you know, I like to let the man drive. And I said, well, that's the way you're driving, is to sit in the back seat or sit next to him and let him drive. But you are the one who made that determination.
Mm-hmm.
And to bring the responsibility of a relationship around to women is a really powerful thing.
Do women want that? I guess.
I think that they have to have it.
They have it. So men are not responsible for the relationship.
Well, everybody's responsible for the relationship. It's just that women drive relationships. Now, right. Some women drive relationships by being coy and having the man reach out.
Right.
And some women make the reach out steps. However, the relationship works best, in my personal opinion, when a woman drops her anchor to you and then keeps dropping it over and over again, because women are the smarter sex and men need to be reunited a lot.
Well, I agree with that. But if a woman doesn't want a relationship, but how do you know?
Just let it go. Well, because, that's excellent.
They say they do, and then they don't.
We'll do another show on relationships.
Okay, good.
Let's end it by saying that relationships are driven by the woman's appetite for the man.
Mm-hmm.
When she has no more appetite for him, it's over. And when he doesn't respond to her appetite she does have for him, it's over. And it's neither right nor wrong, nor good nor bad. Relationships are driven off of appetite, and it's the woman's appetite for the man and the man's ability to respond to her appetite.
But there's also this game that's being played, which you call Tantra, where it's like a little bit, no this, and no, not that, and come back.
Well, yeah,
there,
I'm saying that the Tantra, the word Tantra has been misunderstood, and a lot of people think it's yab yum and running energy and cycling energy. I think that that's just a very physical part of Tantra. I think the real Tantra is the art of relating.
Right.
And I think the real art of relating is you dance in, you dance out, you dance in, you dance out. The trees turn green, the leaves turn brown, the leaves fall off. It seems to go dormant. The spring returns, the green comes back. That's Tantra.
Yeah, that's the play of relationship.
Play of consciousness. Play
and
of
you have to sometimes bear with it or not, and then go into the unknown and say, is it over? Is this what the woman's driving us to? Or is she just taking us around the block a few times, right?
Am I just being given a good spin, and am I willing to go for it if that's just the case?
That's right. Or is it over? We have to keep playing.
We got to get to the no that means no's and the yes that means yes.
I know. We'll do a whole thing on relationships because that is so good.
But to bring you back to your point, which is where our next step is.
Yes.
The Christ and the Buddhas and the angels and the devas, it doesn't matter what religion you're a part of, this has nothing to do with religion.
Right.
Religion is the limit. But at the core of each religion, from Judaism to Islam to Christianity to Buddhism to Hinduism, at the core of and all the shamans and Maoris and Aboriginals and all the different Wiccans, and at the core of them all is a central point of love. That is named the Christ, the Maitreya Buddha, the White Buffalo Spirit, the Amun Mahdi, the Messiah. Fine. But drop the accoutrement for a minute and realize that, well, here's an interesting way to put it. The mineral kingdom started, the whole planet, when the sun breathed out an orb and said, I'm going to put a planet there, the sun created the planet. Boom. So where's the source? The sun. The sun is what feeds us. And so the planet said, okay, I got this. And now, as human beings, we're like, oh, God put me here. I got this. I'll make you proud, God. And what humans are waking up to is that that isn't good enough, that we can't use our ego and our ideals and our ideas and our miasms and our thought forms and our beliefs as food. If we do that, we have to keep eating food. We have to keep killing animals to eat food. We have to sustain ourselves on our darkness. When we turn toward the sun and let the sun be the source and let God be the source, you can eat vegetables, you can eat fruit, you can eat grasses, and your body thrives because you've got the prana as the source of you, and you've got a different consciousness orchestrating the show. Well, when the sun breathed that orb out, put that gaseous thing over there and said, that's Earth, all seven kingdoms were subtle. And after that spun around the sun for a while, it organized it intelligently enough for the mineral kingdom to form. And then the mineral kingdom formed a rock, a stony iron meteorite, and it went around the sun in densification with the other six kingdoms in the subtle for 3 billion years. And then the next organized group a vegetable kingdom could be a part of it for 800 million years of organization. And then the next group of animal kingdom came in for about 800 million years of organization. And the next group called the human group came in, and it's been about 22 million years of experiment for the human king to organize. And now the fifth kingdom that's subtle is going to come in and take form here sooner
this
or later.
This energy, body, awareness, angelic.
Eventually, all seven kingdoms will be material. Well, right now, humanity thinks it's the top of the food chain. When it's the fourth kingdom, it's the fourth of seven, so it's the bridge. And the bridge is the kingdom that brings the soul into activity, because everything above human is soul and spirit-based, and everything below human is intelligence-based. So the human being is the shift from will and intelligence to love that can bridge and hold the whole thing together, that allows the next kingdom built out of love to become tangible. So that's why you have people seeing angels, seeing the Buddha, seeing the Divine Feminine, seeing Mary, seeing Jesus, seeing the Christ. That's why you have this.
This is the ascension, it's been called, or whatever you want to call it.
And really, it's the fifth kingdom is descending while we ascend enough to merge with them, and eventually, over the next 100 million years or so, get all seven kingdoms in form. And so the step we're on is we have to shift from intelligence to love. We have to be the bridging kingdom. That is the kingdom of love, and that is group conscious, and soul is the simple term to use.
Thank you, Stephen Hinckley.
Alan!
Yeah, no, that was
awesome,
a very good thesis about where we're at in our human evolution and why people like you are coming forward to put the pieces together. You've articulated a kind of history of modern spirituality, because people don't know where to turn, but they all have to do is turn to their own resistance.
Yeah. You know? And I have to turn to my own resistance every single day. I wake up, you know, and I have to really say to myself, okay, what's going to relieve this pressure in my face? What's going to free my spine? What's going to give me the opportunity to go sit and have a coffee with my friend Alan? It's, you know, everything requires a little getting after, and the way I do it is you just realize I am the soul. You know, I am light divine. I am this guy. And, you know, struggle harder, Steve. You know, struggle harder. Pain kills the pain. Poison kills the poison. Struggle harder.
Well, it's not always a struggle.
Not always. And I need people like you to remind me of that.
Right.
Because I do make it hard.
Yeah. It's joyful. Let's
Thank
be
you.
In joy.
Thank you.
How can people find you?
Hinckley, H-I-N-K-E-Y, at Mac.com. Mm-hmm. My Facebook page, Steve Hinckley, my friends page, is the easiest place. Steve Hinckley, my friends page. My internet is SteveHinckley.com is my is that page. And just, you know, PM me or text me or email me there, and we'll get started.
And
whatever we can do.
And you're traveling around the country doing healing theater.
I'm doing healing theater. Right now we're in New York. We'll do Healing Theater in New York, Montreal, Toronto, Chicago, Denver, Aspen, back to California. And I'm taking privates in person, privates on the phone or Skype. And I'm open to anyone who would have ideas for where we can do this on a permanent, ongoing basis in New York or any other place they think would be the place, because there your audience is global, where we could really, you know, have a nice group of people and make a difference. Because I went around the world 20 times to five locations over and over and over again. I'll do it again. I mean, I just want the world to have it.
Let's see how it goes.
Thank you, my brother.
Thank you.
I'm so excited to hang with you today.
Thank you. This is Alan Steinfeld for New Realities. If you want to reach me, go to my website, newrealities.com. Email me at newrealities@earthlink.net. Thank you. This program is produced by Portal to Ascension. Portal to Ascension is having a huge conference October 3rd and 4th in Irvine, California. Go to ascensionconference.com, and thank you all for listening.